closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
How do you guys, we'll just jump in. Robert will show up whenever. Hey, everybody, welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul. That's Vinny DiPonto. And Robert Ramirez will show up when he wants because he does that. And we'll just make fun of him. How have you, you've been doing, you know, these amazing ticketed shows. It seems like they're going very well. And how do you manage, we were just talking about kind of managing studio space, especially if you're in a smaller location like the both of us are. How do you manage like being creative and keeping the work? Because I get really burned out quickly just being in the same space.
Yeah. Well, I was coming from a small studio in Brooklyn. So it was the way I did it there was have designated spots of creativity. So like this would be my art corner. This would be my practice corner. And I just moved to upstate New York and I have a 2-bedroom. And so at least like one of the rooms now is sort of the designated office, which is kind of nice in sure. Studio.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's Robert. Hi, Robert.
Hey, Robert made it.
I did it.
Great job. Hey, you got started because Vinny has to go buy a house today or something.
That's great.
He's got to hold out.
Yeah, that's a good Sunday. That's a good Sunday activity.
Yeah. We try to get a house every Sunday or so.
Oh, that's so nice. That's wonderful. That's a great idea.
If you bought a house and then sold a house literally every other week, you would probably make about $5,000 at the way inflation's going.
Scheme.
We should just pick any product and buy it once a week and then sell it the next week.
I feel like there's
something there.
I've been legit doing that with Bitcoin. And
damn. Ethereum.
Ethereum's good. Ethereum's a little bit more stable, you know, a little bit safer, play it safe. But I was listening to something on Bitcoin. this is not a magic podcast. This is a financial advice podcast from three people that have no business giving financial advice.
No.
But yeah,
Vinny might because he's buying a house.
Well, yeah, he clearly is doing something right. You and I both are renters and will be renters forever.
Yes.
I already did the intro, Robert. Hey, that's Vinny. That's Robert. Now you're all caught up.
Oh my God, you remembered me this time.
Oh yeah, I forgot him last time, Vinny. It was great. And then we didn't air that episode.
all because of that.
Yeah. Vinny was talking about managing different creative spaces. Robert's also in a smaller space too. So Vinny, you were saying like using different portions of the house to stay creative.
Yeah. So I was coming from a studio in Brooklyn and I basically had designated, you know, kind of corners where I would do certain things simply just so I can leave stuff. So I didn't have to kind of put stuff away because the biggest hurdle for me is when I feel like I have to keep a well-kept house and I have to like clean up everything. And then what ends up happening for me personally is that I don't dive back in because I can't sort of just dive right back into the mess. Do you know what I mean? I sort of have to start over again.
Yeah.
And I think sort of a really helpful thing for me is keeping a mess, like keeping a workspace that you can dive back into and just kind of start working and experimenting and writing again. And you don't have to feel like you have to stuff it all away in drawers. Mm. And so moving upstate and having this kind of 2-bedroom and more space, I'm able to kind of keep my theater set up and I'm able to kind of work on new material and not have to break stuff down every time I do it. Same with right over here. I have like, I do mixed media collages. So I have like my whole art studio set up over here. So it's kind of nice to just have those designated areas that I can kind of come back to and close the door and just start working.
Mm-hmm. What was the inspiration for other than, you know, global pandemic, you've been doing your ticketed show, Mental Amusements. Where did that kind of, and you've been working with our buddy, Chris Ruggiero too. Chris is a buddy of mine. I've known him for many years. Very, you know, driven dude, just and very good at media as well. So how did that kind of come about?
Yeah, I think back in April, a friend of mine asked me to do their virtual birthday party. And they were like, is this possible? And I said, I don't know. at that point in time, I had no idea. And so I'm so thankful to that group of friends. They were so supportive. And I did my first show over Zoom. And of course, I called Chris. And just because Chris is everything tech and he's a great editor and also aside from a great performer and juggler, he sort of has had his finger on the pulse and just kind of got some pointers. And then over time, over the next few months, I got sponsorship from Atlas Obscura and Airbnb, and we did a partnership with them with the show. So I had to kind of up the tech a little bit, and slowly but surely kind of built out the show from there.
It's funny how we've all kind of done, like for me, it's been the same thing. I was like, oh, this slightly higher paying gig is coming through. I should get a better microphone or a better light. And it just like slowly gets better. And now my studio is where it should have been probably 3 months ago.
Well, look, I mean, I think it's obviously all about the show and how you're connecting with people too, but it does help that it has a high production value, right? That it looks like interesting from the audience's perspective.
Yeah. And it puts the client at ease too. I think anybody entering okay, this is legit. Cause you'll have people book stuff and they'd be like, put the deposit in, everything will be on the books, the calendar. Yeah. And they're like, okay, how does this work?
Right.
You
no,
have to
I know.
Sit with them and show them the picture in picture and all that stuff.
It's really crazy because I think like Chris doing the whole production value, and like we do the show on StreamYard, and I think it's been really it's been like a bump in production value just because it's, you know, I can do the show over Zoom, but I think Zoom has become such a business platform. I mean, obviously everyone's doing everything on it, but to me it just felt like a nice separation to have a link that goes to a StreamYard, and we have a front row, and we have people who don't want to participate who are just watching the streaming feed instead of dealing with all of the audio chaos that is Zoom, people talking over each other, muting, unmuting. It just is much easier for Chris to run the show from Atlanta, Georgia, and select people up to come on stage. And it just is so much more streamlined. And we have it down now to science, which is great.
That's awesome.
Robert. How long was the difference between when you decided to do StreamYard from like Zoom shows? Because I think you're right. I think like a ticketed show should be through StreamYard. But if a company is hiring you, then it would make sense that you're going through Zoom because it's the platform that they're coworkers are used to, so you just have to adapt to that. But I feel like doing your own ticketed show and it going through StreamYard, it feels so much more like you're going to an event. It feels like you're not going to work like you would going through Zoom. Yeah.
That was the debate we had with Justin doing Justin's shows. He was like, should we do StreamYard? Should we do Zoom? That's a tough call. Yeah.
We did StreamYard really early on, probably like May or June, because Chris was like, this is it. Trust
That's
me.
Great.
We came up with the front row being something that like, okay, we can only have 8 points of contact in the show anyway. So we might as well like go. I think at the time it was 6, but they had just upped it by 2 recently in the last couple months. So I had that many more, you know, people in the front row, which is nice. But man, it provided another threshold of theatricality for the show. So it was like, instead of just opening Zoom and here we are in like some, you know, hacked waiting screen, you know, waiting room, we now have like a lobby and music, and it feels really nice. And I know like those things are possible on Zoom, but ultimately it felt like a different box to put the show in. It felt like, okay, cool. This is something new for people. Nobody has to download anything. We can kind of click, we can make specific pages on my website for people to click through. So it's really kind of become a whole system. We actually just recently went over to Stellar from, because we used to stream out the general admission, which is what we call the sort of non-streaming participants, to YouTube, but we've just converted to Stellar, which is really, really fun. People can kind of do the applause emojis and participate in different ways. So that's been really fun.
I haven't even
too.
Heard of that. How is that different from, I mean, other than just like being able to interact, is it just more user-friendly? Does it work better?
It's more user-friendly. It's also, there's sort of a psychological thing happening. If a corporate client is paying for something and then they get a YouTube link, it's kind of like, well, I can watch something on YouTube. Why would I pay for this? Even though it's live, right? But you send them a link to something like Stellar and it looks really professional on their end. They take care of the ticketing. And it's kind of one point of purchase that you go through instead of having kind of multiple things, which we were doing in the past. So it's been really great. We've only used it for the run so far, not for any sort of corporate stuff, but it's been it's been really streamlined, which is nice.
That's really cool.
It looks like you're fully set up for a show right now.
Well, I do have one today.
Okay.
And I've had five this week. So we're running the show for the next few weeks now.
There's an eyeball behind him. There's a...
is it something in a wine glass? I mean, this is like... It looks like we're doing a podcast and you're showing us a show that nobody has
experienced. Yeah, I mean, this is my set. This is everything I use in the show. And it's... yeah, it's sort of my museum of oddities over here.
Okay, here's what I want you to do, and I'm going to describe to everyone what we see. I want you, because here's what people don't get the behind the scenes of this, is they just see this beautiful shot that's been like set up and designed for the audience to see. It's just great. I want you to just move the camera far left and then far right. Ready? Go. And I want to see how.
You don't have to. If it's going to mess up your shot, you don't have to.
No, you're going to do it.
It's fine. Here, I'll guide you to it.
What's the camera set? I don't touch it.
Because I want to see how far he goes to where you're like, yeah, I knew that was off camera.
Okay. To the right is a hanging suit coat
on a closet. On a closet thing.
And we're panning left now.
So this is my bookshelf, but we're getting rid of a bed, a box spring. So this is sort of an extra storage thing now.
Great. So everyone. There's storage around him.
I forgot to mention that Robert's here to ruin everything. That's why, that's why I bring him into the podcast.
Mm-hmm. No, but I run
with a firecracker in my hand always.
I think it's great that you asked that, because I do think it's so funny. We, as magicians, we have such a way of really framing things, not just in the virtual sense, but in, you know, things Correct. Look a lot more professional or
well, yeah, if I said, hey, come around the table now, you would see this duct taped like piece of crap of a savant.
My microphone is literally sitting on three books because it wasn't high enough to reach my face.
Well, everyone asked me, there's a particular part in the show where I peek through curtains, and these producers were like so amazed by it. I don't have it set up right now, but here, let me actually set it up for you. So there are the curtains.
He has just placed
at the beginning of the show, I peek through this like curtain, and everyone's like, whoa, what a cool, like you could spread out these curtains, and literally all it is a wire hanger.
Guys, they didn't. So it did never aired, but Taylor Hughes has a little tiny Amazon box that falls from the sky as if like a helicopter noise comes, and a tiny little Amazon box falls to his side. And then when he takes whatever's inside, he lets go of it and it just goes back up by itself.
I work with...
And Vinny's got curtains that he's tiny little curtains. I'm missing some tiny gimmick in my show, I guess.
Oh, my God. Hey, everybody's doing this so well. I worked with a comedian, Joe Zimmerman, the other day for a corporate, and he's like, he starts off, hey, guys, welcome. Oh, I just got to move my stool. And he has this tiny little stool, sets it right here. Oh, I got to move the mic stand. And he moves it slightly to the left, and it's framed so it looks like it's a real-sized mic stand. Oh, so smart. So clever.
That's really fun. When the ice bucket challenge was going on, Justin and I think we were.
That was great one. You guys
yeah.
did that together. Oh, that was so good.
We were on a little tour, and I think we were in like Virginia or something. And we ordered a bunch of stuff from Amazon, a giant solo cup, and like, and it took like 30 times to like film this perspective illusion. It was so fun though. It was really
yeah,
really
I think that was my favorite of the ice bucket challenges. If you haven't seen it, go look it up. It's brilliant. But because the rest are just like, hey, this is me nominating Susan. Blah, blah. Anyway, I'm sorry. The internet's terrible. Vinny, you and I met working on the Magic Show, Theory 11's show, Justin's show at the Roosevelt Hotel. You were directing, and it was really fun to get to see you work and your process there. I had a Canadian teacher from Second City. You'd always say process, so now I have to say process. Where did your, I mean, I know you, we were talking, you were helping me last week when I had some life decisions. You majored in psychology and then also double majored in theater. So where did that kind of interest come from?
Yeah. Well, I guess I was interested in both of those things in college. Like I really just couldn't pick. So I did a double major and, it was ridiculous and hard, but it still allowed me to do my shows. I was in every show I could possibly be in and still do my own shows, which was something I wanted to do, and has kind of transferred over into post-college life as well. I'm in a theater company in New York, and as well as a consultant on random theater shows, as well as doing my own shows. So it's, you know, theater has kind of just been my whole life. And the psychology, of course, helps with saying that I'm a mentalist. And I can be like, oh, and I also studied psychology.
I have a piece of paper that, which honestly, that was my whole reason for wanting to go in it in the first place, because it makes it more legitimate. And then I think that also does something to the way people perceive it. It's exactly what you were saying with, you know, the YouTube link versus, you know, something non-YouTube. It's just immediately sets up a different precedent. That's very smart.
Yeah. And it genuinely helps inform your work in a lot of ways. I mean, it helps to talk about, you know, real issues and real things in your show, if that's, you know, the path you choose to take. Mm-hmm. So
I saw your show in the parlor last year, and I got to say, I mean, Robert and I kind of like have our opinions about full on mentalism shows, and yours was one of my favorites because it was just lacking pretension. It was just, it was fun. It was smart. It was just like really good magic. So I rarely walk out of like a mentalism show going, yeah, that was great. A lot of times you walk out going, well, that was a lot of billet switches. So I don't know where does that, why are you so good? That's what I'm asking.
What's your approach? He wants to say, what's your approach to mentalism?
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Robert. That's why you're here.
I think so much mentalism is based on the authority on stage and how that performer can control you. And I think that's often why we get into magic and mentalism in general, is because we want to have some sort of power, whether we were got into it when we were kids or whatever, we wanted to have some sort of power over people. I think I realized, or I felt better on stage displaying a sense of vulnerability, because I felt like it often wasn't seen enough in characters in films and theater, but also in magic. You know, we have these gods on stage who are flawless. And even when they show a little bit of flaw, they kind of get you in the end, you know? And I think, while that's fine and it has worked so well for so many years, there is something to be said about connecting with your audience through vulnerability, and not just faux vulnerability, but actually, telling real stories and listening to your audience. I mean, I think that's a huge thing, and not just using their information as props, as like a confabulation, you know, actually making their stories front and center. And that's something I try to do in my shows. It's just something that feels right to me and works for me. I'm of course guilty of being the god, on stage too. So that's, it's a balance. It's a constant balance.
Mm-hmm. Was there a mentalist that you saw that you hated so much that you said, I don't like that. This is the approach it should be. Or was it a mentalist that had the same mindset as you did and you wanted to kind of create that feeling?
Yeah, I
basically tell us what magicians you hate.
Please name names.
Name all names. Because no, I think there's that two approaches. There's the one of seeing something you don't like and thinking, I want to create something better. Or I love the way this person has created this. Feels very individual. How can I, take that to the next level?
To me, this is the same as the hero question. Who in magic is your hero? Who do you look up to? I love that question. I think it's great to have people we admire. The thing that I do creatively is I don't try to see other people's shows, and I don't try to see what people are doing. I know that sounds like
taken you off my show list for many years.
That's the reason I haven't seen your virtual show. Thank you for saying it.
Thank God. Yeah, I was just really giving you an out.
I 100% agree with that, because no, and Robin Williams, admittedly, he's like, I'm so guilty. He would see somebody, you know, absorb it, and then 3-4 months later, it would come out on stage, and somebody would accuse him, and he didn't even realize he was doing it. He thought he created it.
Yes, we see so much of that. So what I tend to do is, I look at the people in theater that I really, really connect with. There are theater artists that inspire me so much. And I try to embody what they're doing, not copy, obviously, the material. It wouldn't translate, but I try to take the kind of heart that they infuse into their show and make it kind of, you know, trickle down into my show. It's hard. It's hard to do. It's hard to make mentalism specifically translate that way. But it's something that I'm continually practicing and figuring out.
Good answer.
Well, good answer.
That was the right answer. Yeah. The right answer.
We would have told you if it was wrong.
I'm also trying to balance out my bits right now, Nick, because I feel like we haven't done a podcast in a couple of weeks.
We haven't. So last week's podcast was too many bits, and it just didn't get aired. For various reasons.
I was trying to let Vinny actually answer the question, which is great. But as he was talking, I was like, I just want to say all these bits that I should be nice about this.
I want to hear them now. Now, all right.
The first sentence after we came back from the first bit is, you're like, I've got many theater inspirations. I want to be like Shirley Temple. now I can't think of her name.
Oh, Shirley Temple.
Norm Lewis, Shirley Temple, and Patti LuPone. Okay. I want a magic show like them.
A magic show dressed as Shirley Temple.
Yeah. Yes. With the arrogance of Burke Moses. There's a deep cut right there.
I don't even get that reference. Oh my God. I know. Wonderful. That's wonderful.
There's going to be somebody who's laughing at that joke. Send a voicemail, guys. Call, leave a voicemail, tell me your Brick Moses story.
Hey, Robert, do your best Brick Moses impression right now.
Hey, guys.
Wow. Sounds just like him. Vinny just left. He turned off his camera.
He closed his tiny curtains, and they're now covering. And now we can't see inside of him. The inside of his
goodness, he sent me a text message right now. He said, go kill yourself. Vinny, what do you think is, how often are you changing material in the virtual show? Because I find Robert and I are the opposite of this. Robert's like, every virtual show he does, he's like, I wrote a whole new hour. And I'm like, I put in a new 2 minutes and I'll work on it. Yeah. I'm just so concerned about the technology exploding. But I guess you have Chris running, and it's probably easier with StreamYard too, as opposed to like Zoom and whatnot. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I have changed the show quite a bit, through the summer and then through the fall. I felt like I changed it quite a bit and I was trying new things. I think now that I have a little bit of, it feels like it's in my muscle memory and I feel like I can do it, I feel a little bit better about not changing it for right now. But recently I have started to question, like, you know, if this goes on for, let's hope not, but let's say another year, you know, it's not sustainable really to do the same show and kind of exhaust your press. You kind of have to come up with something new. So I think I probably have to approach that at some point. I'll probably in the near future probably have to say, I have to write a new hour and come up with it. So I don't know. I'm currently not changing it, but may have to in the future.
Yeah, we're in a weird position where you can't really go and just like work on something. Like at the castle, normally you'd sandwich in a new 5 minutes throughout the week and just, you know, get it to work by the end. And we really don't have that luxury anymore unless you're doing some sort of virtual open mic. And in that case, I mean, I'm always self-conscious to do something brand new at an open mic because it just, to me, it's like I worry that people are going to see that and go, oh, he's not very good. And then you're burning ticket sales in the future. So I like sandwiching new material in between stuff that I know works because I'm self-conscious, egomaniac. What about you, Robert?
I think that's smart.
I have a dartboard with different tricks, and then whatever one I hit, that's the order we're going to do them in.
Robert's impressed that he'll like hand me something right before a show, and I'll just be...
Okay, Vinny, we're gonna gauge your anxiety level of this, okay?
Okay.
You and I, Vinny, are gonna be doing a show together.
Okay.
And there's a trick I do normally by myself that you were like, hey, we should do this together. And I go, that's a great idea, Vinny. Let's do a trick that I've done by myself. Let's do it together. And it's 2 minutes before the show. And you look at me and go, hey, what do you want me to do in this trick? And I go, oh, you know, just, you know, get this piece of information. Or if you want to, you can do this part of the trick where I'm going to explain the method, but you will have no time to actually perform it. And you say, yeah, I'll do the part of it where, you know, I have to do something with method that I've never touched or seen. So just describe to me how it works. Vinny, would you then do it in the show? Literally, no, you finish the sentence. You finish the sentence. How does it work? I tell you, or you go, great. And then the curtain opens and we start the show.
Wow. That feels really nerve-wracking to me.
Good, because I definitely didn't do that. So that's good.
Yeah, I would say that needs a little rehearsal.
Well, I just want to know how much anxiety you have from it. Because Nick didn't care. Just literally was like, great. And then walked on stage and then we did the trick later. Perfectly fine. But I was like, I don't know many people that would, like, I would have said yes. Nick would have said yes. I don't know many people who would have been like, yeah, just tell me. I'll do it.
Yeah. What's funny is when I first met Justin was through MySpace and I was in college and I contacted him in MySpace. I found out he was coming and I was like, dude, you're on my turf. Like, you have to, you know, I'm the magician here.
I just picture you in like a 90s haircut, listen to some Dave Matthews, smoking a joint.
How old do you think I am now?
I don't know. 72.
47.
47 years old. You grew up during the Nixon administration, right?
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah.
So he was so nice. He was like, let's hang out because it was at what's called the pub at my college, and let's meet up before and hang out and jam. And so we did, and I helped him kind of set up his sound equipment, and I was like, this was minutes before the show when he was set up. I was like, wouldn't it be fun if we like did a thing together? And he was like, yeah, let's do this card trick where we each pick a card and we stand back to back and then we flip and reveal. And I was like, okay. And we did. So it's a very similar situation. We kind of did this trick and it was fun and great. And I think it's kind of cool to say yes to those things.
Oh,
if you have, you know, the improvisational skills to kind of get up there and do that. But man, not if it's like a high paying gig or something.
Well, I think a lot of that comes too is like you knew Justin, you knew his personality, and you trusted Justin even though you didn't know each other. And it's kind of the same thing when Robert and I are on stage together. Like, I'll throw anything at him and he'll throw anything at me, and I know it's going to be okay. Even if it crashes and burns, we'll find a way to make it, well, you know, something will work out of it. And I'm sure it was the same way. And yeah, Justin's great about that too. We would, you know, when I was on tour with him briefly, a couple moments like that happened as well. Like, oh, we're doing this. And then, you know, show starts and you're like, if it was anybody else, I would be terrified right now. Like there were times when we had to load certain things and, you know, you would look at the room and go, well, this isn't a theater. How are we going to pull this off? And then we just did it and it still worked. And it's amazing what you can do when you trust, you know, your partner. It's just that basic improv rule.
Well, I think that's a great example of you and Robert on stage and having that rapport and having that communication. I think a lot of solo performers both don't have that in their training. They maybe haven't had improv experience or theater experience, and they work solo. And what often happens is you kind of have this one-way communication. You see so many performers dead behind the eyes, and no matter what is coming at them, they have their sort of stock response, right? And that kind of rapport, that kind of back and forth is what should be happening with the audience. Mm-hmm. And I think actually Justin's a prime example of a performer who is so good at listening and so good at responding to what is coming at him in that moment that I think, you know, I think we should all kind of strive to have that kind of listening skills, you know?
Yeah, I remember that from your parlor show. I remember watching that and you having that same ability. And it's funny how you notice it because so many performers don't have that. And it's sad. It's like, that's more important than the skill. That's more important than getting the slight super clean, just getting the audience on your side and like just being, you know, a pal back and forth.
Yeah.
I feel like that skill only comes across in like theatrical ways. I feel like if I'm in, like, if I was trying to buy a house right now, I don't know how I would talk to the real estate agent, because I feel like I would be like, I don't know. A lot. I think I'd be saying that a lot. Do you feel like, do those things stress you out more? Do you feel like that your like theater background stuff like makes you relax through like all like the unknown, I guess? Because like, because I work at Best Buy. I don't know. This is our thing of the podcast. I work at Best Buy. I talk about it all the time. And I'm learning so much about like having a regular job that I've never experienced in 33 years of my life.
Yeah.
And it makes me so stressed from like just weird normal things that everyone else is fine with. And I'm like, okay, when can I take 15-minute breaks? It's between how many hours? And I got a clock. Like, I get so stressed by what feels like everybody's normal because my skills don't transfer over.
Mm-hmm. I think that's valid. I think a lot of performers' skills on stage don't translate to life. I can speak from experience. In life, I deal with anxiety pretty heavily. And I have to say, when I walk out on stage, I feel alive. I feel not invincible so much, but I feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing to take more chances. And
yeah, you feel in control.
Yeah. And I feel much more present. And I think when I go off stage, I anxiety. Nick and I were talking about this not too long ago, but I feel like very anxious about a lot of stuff, particularly in a pandemic, but how our communication skills are being tested right now. But man, I can't name a performer who's exactly the same on stage and off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's just something that happens.
Yeah. To me, there's a sense of control on stage, because once you walk on stage, everything around you, you have set up. The show is yours. You've done everything. Everything that's going to happen was because you had created it to that point, whether it was actually setting up the prop, learning the routine, whatever it is, every single thing that you're going to do for the next hour was 100% in your control. Now, some audience members may be crazy or say things that you didn't expect, but you have the control and the skill to yes and them or shut them down or whatever. There's just so much control, I feel like, when I walk on stage. And off stage, I have zero control over anything, just anything. I don't have control of anything.
Yeah.
I'm now panicked already. I've just...
Yeah, you framed that in a very dark way. Wow. No, I agree with that. I think we are, because the universe is chaos. So like for 20 to 45 or 60 minutes, it's like, all right, this is my little universe, and I get to control everything. And I think once you've been given that power and then it goes away, you realize how much you kind of crave it and need it. And yeah, especially going through with a real job. I went through that too years ago when I worked at Circuit City.
He worked at Circuit City. This is a friendly
reminder. I feel like I need to go get a job at the Wiz or something. Doesn't even exist, but
neither does Circuit City anymore. Best Buy absorbed it all.
It was delicious.
It's good. It puts hair on your chest. But then, I mean, it's the same reason I let go of grad school last week, is I'm sitting there with all these people that are just like, okay, this is what I do. I can exist in this world. I can write papers. I can do this. I can get this piece of paper that proves I'm smart. And I'm sitting here going, I've been living in the real world for, out of school for 12 years, and I just don't function that way anymore. And mm-hmm. I think it just depends on your personality type, really.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard for a lot of performers. I'm writing a script right now that focuses on a real performer from the past who, really struggles with this identity on stage and off stage. And it's something I think that that is in the forefront of a lot of performers' minds. I will say, just to go back to a talking point before, was I think, Robert, you're talking about control and being on stage. What's really nice about workshopping something and figuring out something as you go is that you really don't have that control. And so as a performer, you start to balance this sense of control that you know you're going to be fine, and the sense that everything could go wrong. And in workshopping something, right? So you get to the final product and you feel a little bit better about it, but you still have to kind of check in with yourself and say, yes, everything is in a controlled environment, but really anything could happen. Like I could get a person on stage and I have who is, maybe not the normal person I get on stage, and I have to kind of face that. And that's something that I think is a skill that you have to hone in order to be a grounded performer.
Vinny's a very good interviewee. I don't know if you guys notice this. He's very, he told me we're going to talk about a topic that was we just had. Then he like reinformed what I said. So it was beautiful.
He just did WDTF before this. So he's just, he's just reciting the things he already told Mark Maron. So this is
good. Oh yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
What's funny is that this is actually all pre-recorded. These are just videos.
We watched a virtual show where that ends that way. And
I was about to say the camera's about to pan back and Vinny's going to be standing next to a video of him.
Have you seen that show, Vinny? Do you know?
What I haven't.
Okay, we'll talk about that off air. But we had opinions of it, and I think it's both went back and forth. It's a clever idea, but I almost think it backfires in some ways.
Got it. Cool. Yeah, I'd be curious. I'm actually, not to turn the tables, but so you both are doing virtual shows, is that right? Or Robert, are you doing a show as well?
So I do very rarely some like corporate gigs or private ones. I had I had way more in a row at first. So like May, April was like three or like one a week. Even that's a lot for at the start of this because nobody was doing it. And then it kind of really died down, and then I wasn't doing anything at all. And then it was just every so often someone would send me a message saying, do you do this? Great, we'll hire you. So I rarely get to do them, but the last one I did was really a big company that I was excited for. So like I had to get a new MacBook because my old one would like overheat. And so I was like, well, the M1 chip just came out. Like that's not going to overheat. I've got to get that because at least – it just was like, there was just so many things that I was like, I got to do all this stuff. So like I had a Stream Deck. I figured out really how to use OBS. And it just, oh my God, we worked so hard on it and it was great. And they loved it and we made it for them. So it's been really nice because now I have this huge setup ready to go and I just don't have any virtual shows. So like, I'm now trying to figure out like, well, what the hell can I use this stuff for? So I haven't figured that out yet. Well, we're going to make this a video podcast.
Okay.
At some point.
Oh yeah, but I'm glad you look nice because this might go on the YouTube.
I'm gonna keep cutting me out.
No, you cut me out completely, and then maybe it's just only Vinny. Is Vinny? Yeah, talking. Yeah.
So the video podcast is always the guest.
You guys are just like waveforms at the bottom. Yeah.
We're really audio ghosts.
So yeah, I don't do a lot of live shows, but I'm just trying to, I took like a 6-month social media break. And so now I'm trying to figure out content and like, what do I want to start doing? Do I want to like do a certain brand or do I just don't care and do what I want to do? And I haven't pinpointed that down, but I have all the tools that I've like budgeted for equipment ready to go. And I haven't used any of it. Yeah. Way to go, stress.
Well, you may still use it, you know, in the future.
I have to. I spent a lot of money. and there's a lot of fun toys here. I just don't haven't played with them.
That's the problem with getting a Best Buy discount. You're like, this is cheaper than retail.
I literally was buying a plug to plug my ukulele or my bass into my computer because you can't go through aux cord. You can't go through USB. They don't make it. But they make a little rig where you plug your, like, quarter inch cable into, and then that goes into aux and it will go straight into the computer. Nice. And so I found on Guitar Center, I was like, oh, I'm gonna buy this. And then for some reason I was like, I'm gonna look on bestbuy.com because why, it's an electronic, but like, why on earth would we have something for guitars? We don't have anything like that. And sure enough, we had it, and sure enough, I got a good discount, and sure enough, I bought it immediately.
Waiting.
No, I just bought it yesterday.
Oh, you just bought it?
Because I was like, oh, it's like this much on Guitar Center, and I don't know why. It was just like, why would we have it at best? That doesn't make any sense. Oh my God, buy it. So now I'm waiting patiently.
Good. I feel like every day has been Christmas in this pandemic. I feel like we've just, like, it was kind of hard at Christmas to be like, what? I don't know what I don't want anything. Yeah. I've literally bought everything over the span of 10 months.
I wanted a fancy camera and I bought it. So now I have it.
Yeah, that's what it just kept happening. Even like Christmas, I got a guitar amp, but then a couple days ago, I received my bass amp, my new bass, my microphone filter, my stand. Like I got all these things and I was like, oh, this was a little bit better than Christmas by accident. Poop.
Vinny, I got these wire hangers.
That is
I gotta think of a small bit.
That curtain looks even cooler when it's away from the camera. That's my favorite part. It's a little curtain, and he pulls it back, and it looks like a very artistically done big curtain, but it's tiny.
I also have this spotlight, in case you're interested in having a spotlight in the show. It's just a flashlight, but it makes
Wow.
He's just pulling a little LED flashlight, and it's lighting up his entire wall.
Isn't that crazy?
But in, like, the perfect circle.
Yeah. So I do a shadow bit in the show, and you can actually adjust, like a spotlight, you can adjust the softness and the size, which is really, really amazing. So
he just twisted the flashlight. It got smaller, and Nick and I both gasped with our mouths open.
I was just thinking of doing a silhouette bit, and I'm like, how would I even do that in the show? And then you pull out that flashlight, and I'm like, okay, now I know how to do that.
Yeah, so I do a version of the Phantom, Anneman's Phantom trick, except you can't really see it right now. But
oh, yeah, that looks so good.
There's usually a blank spot at that point, but basically...
He's holding up the flashlight to the wall, and there's a silhouette of a man's face.
Yeah, it's so we do that in the show, and it's just like, it's... I'm trying to figure out ways to kind of bring about different texture in the show instead of just technology tricks. And because that's really helpful too. It's like, how do you kind of play with this frame, and how do you make it so that people are constantly, you know, interested instead of just, you know, falling asleep at another card trick. So,
yeah, that's a great point. But yeah, I think that's important to, you got to keep the frame interesting for people, because it's that same static shot, whether it's like going to a video or cutting to a second camera or, you know, cutting to a close-up camera. It's just, you need to keep people's attention. And we were talking about this too, of like, I feel like a bit can't, I don't know how long your routines are, but I feel like a bit for virtual needs to be between like 2 and 4 minutes, kind of keep moving. I don't know if you feel differently about that.
Yeah, I've had to adjust monologues because those are the things that kind of set up the heart of the show, of course, and the effects, but realize very quickly that you can't, you know, you can get away with a little bit more on stage, of course, when you're with an audience in person, but when you're virtual, you can't do a lengthy 3-minute monologue to set something up. You kind of have to disperse it. So I kind of wrote the core of the show and then split up those things throughout the evening's performance, so it doesn't feel like doing it all in one section.
Smart.
But yeah, tricks have to be, I'm sad to say it, but they kind of have to be as they are on like Fool Us or America's Got Talent. They have to kind of be these pithy, you know, quick things that that you do and get the point across, which is not great. It's not great for magic, but it is kind of the world we're living in. And I'm excited to figure out how to not do that. But in the same sense, like, I kind of have to make a living right now.
Oh, yeah. And I think the hardest part about that is I don't think it's people's attention spans are small. I think it's because the screen is so small, I can see other things around me to remind myself, oh, I got to get some more water. And immediately I'm taken out. Opposed to being in the theater, that small glass of water is now small in comparison to I'm in this theater and the stage. So it does. Yeah, it's really hard. It's really hard because people are just distracted by the things around them.
Yeah, and their phones are going off like on their computers and emails are coming in. And I think that's kind of why I chose to try to do the more analog stuff like the curtain and like the shadow, just because it feels less tech. It reminds you less about where we are, which is on a computer. And it kind of brings you into the world and lets this frame dissolve a little bit more. And I know people are like leaning into the tech, and that's totally cool too. I think that works, can work really well. But that's just kind of the approach that I took.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's so important with magic to go analog when possible. Anytime somebody shows me something that's very tech heavy or, you know, using Bluetooth or something like that, I'm like, well, if you can do it analog, my vote is always to do it analog, because
yeah, you can do Aces Front analog.
Oh, you mean right here?
Yeah, Aces Front. It's a product by the Magic Apple and Robert Ramirez, available.
Whoa,
at the...
Not my handling. I got rid of the handkerchief because the handkerchief's unnecessary. By the way, I have some notes on that. I have some notes.
It's because you have large gorilla hands.
It's like, get a ZV-1 from Best Buy. Seriously, man. What are you doing?
Get the Robert Ramirez discount. By the way, thanks, Robert, for getting me this camera. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry, Vinny. We made this about Robert's stupid trick, as we always do. He gets free promotion every episode.
Yeah, well, I'm not getting paid, so.
Either am I, buddy. Either am I.
Well, then you should talk about Charlie. Oh, no, he's leaving.
Oh, God. He's left again. He closed the little curtains.
But we can see the spotlight through the curtains.
Yeah, and there's a little hand with a middle finger coming through it right now.
All right.
Oh, my God, it looks so... I can't describe what that looks like.
This is going to be one of the few podcasts that encourages people to go watch it on the YouTube. So this is great. Robert's going to edit this up and put it up in about 3 years, and it'll be great.
Yeah, once I figure out what we're actually going to do. It looks like, you know what it looks like? It looks like a green screen of this curtain opening up, and we've panned into this room.
Yeah.
That's what
yeah.
it looks like.
That's so cool.
Because it doesn't look, doesn't look like your hands are actually touching said curtain when you moved it fast enough.
What's funny is that the clips are on my laptop, on the top of my laptop, because they're just like these little clips.
You know what those are really good for?
What?
Card manip.
Really?
Jeff McBride says to use
them. Oh, yeah.
You put cards into them. And you can just
Commando show. You just kind of flip it in your thing.
They're great card clips.
They're also great because they magnetize to the top of the laptop now. So.
Insider virtual magic with Vinny DePonto. That's so great.
Show us your favorite small gag. Tag us on Instagram. Show us what your favorite gag is in your show. If you've got a tiny prop. We love to see it.
Robert, I don't know if you follow Vinny on the Instagram, but you released your intro to the virtual show, and it's all done with like shadow puppets, and it's the coolest thing I've ever seen. Who was the person that did it for you?
Thank you. Yeah, I collaborated with my friends Alex and Olmsted, and they are incredible puppetry artists who I've, 11 years ago now, I worked with them and Mario, the magician, who if he hasn't been on here, absolutely has to come on here. Mario, we did a street festival and I met them there and hired them for this festival, hired Alex for the festival, and just have been following their work ever since. And I approached Alex with this idea of doing a shadow puppet all by hand, by the way. They cut out, you know, all of these incredible puppets, and they've shot this whole thing, you know, on a super tiny, you know, stage, and it looks amazing. It sort of looks like it's animated with a computer, but they did everything manually. And I absolutely love their work, and it was fun to, you know, work with artists right now, because you know you don't get to do that. So thank you. They would be happy to hear that. So Alex and Olmsted are the folks that made that incredible.
That's awesome.
I love being able collaboration in other forms of like is so good. It makes your shows even better. My fiance is a interior designer and graphic designer, and so there's she has a constant like completely different vision and eye for stuff. So when she's like designing something for me, like it's so interesting, because I'd be like I don't know anybody who's like sees it like that. And so it's just so incredible to collaborate with stuff with people
important
views that you don't have.
Yeah. And I think when we go into shows, a lot of performers like to just direct themselves, write themselves, do the set design. And man, I have to say, I have become a better performer for hiring folks, you know, a team of collaborators to come in and inform my decisions, but also kind of really help to bring character to the whole show. There was a show I did in 2014 where we brought in a set designer, which I was kind of wary about, and the set ended up looking beautiful, and she kind of became a part of the magic. You know, she was coming up with methods for things, and we were kind of like, oh, this is amazing. So it's kind of great when you bring in a trusted group of folks, a director, writer, set designer, and trust their sense of style and aesthetic, because you become a better performer. You have to find those right folks, right? But you have to, you know, you sort of gain so much from that, which is great. So I love that.
I remember you doing that on Justin's show, the 311 show. And yeah, you would, after every run or every whatever tech rehearsal, or even just like a little change here and there, you would, some of the notes you would give were just so different, I think, than what a lot of other magicians would give. And I think that just probably was informed by your theater background. And that was very refreshing to see. And that's, you know, really enjoyed, you know, it was just fun to get to watch you work during that whole process.
Well, also, we had the space. I mean, we had this beautiful space in the Roosevelt that felt like it was begging for, you know, beautiful lights to be everywhere. And we had so many opportunities, you know, with the bookshelf people walk through, we had so many opportunities to set these theatrical thresholds that for it to just be treated like a comedy set, it didn't feel, first of all, it didn't feel like the ticket price that everyone was paying, sure, right? So, yeah. So, you know, I can go to Caroline's and see Justin for $20, or I can go to Hollywood Roosevelt and see this fully formed, beautiful show that I think Theory 11 knew, you know, early on with Dan White and in that space as well at the Nomad. They had a sense of style and how to get people to understand that the show started before they even walked into the door. And that is so, so important.
Yes, that was such a theater thing to say. I mean, a lot of Broadway shows would do that. A lot of they would dress up the lobby and dress up the theater itself. So when you walked in, that set, the theater itself melted into the set on stage, and it just was seamless. And it's absolutely true. It changes completely the mood that you set for your shows.
Yeah, I think that really comes from Disney in a lot of ways. I think like you walk into the antechamber of like a Disney ride and you're like, oh, this is the ride has begun. Like the person comes on the screen and like the lights flicker and you're like, oh, this is, you know, like yeah, this
the importance the ride. Of the cue. Like the second you yeah. walk into that, you're slowly walking into a different universe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same thing with each land. Nick, I don't know if you know this since you've kind of dabbled in it, but Disney set up speakers in certain directions. So the best example, and they always show us this, or they show you this when you get trained there, is when you're walking from a Small World, you go underneath the train tracks to get into what is that? Roger Rabbit's in Roger Rabbit's in it's not Toonland. What the
Toontown?
Toontown. Thank you. Jesus Christ. What is my problem? But they always walk you because they say as you walk under the listen for the music. Because by the second you get underneath the train track, you all of a sudden can't hear It's a Small World anymore. It's completely gone. And you can only hear Toontown. And so, it's just all specifically designed that way so that you feel the second you've crossed that threshold, you're now immediately in the other world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that attention to detail is really, even if it's invisible, it really does something to you subconsciously in the experience, right? It heightens your memory of the experience. It heightens the experience, period. It just really, really goes a long way to make it feel like you are being dropped into a world.
Yeah. I would say that's something nice that the Dan White show right now, the virtual show, does, is they provide you a small candle in your box and they ask you to light it. And I think that watching the other people in the show, you immediately see how many people have their lights turned off with just their candle in front of them, with the screen in front of them. If they immediately feel like they got this little candle and know, oh, this is the mood that we're going to set. So it's like really interesting how just a candle inspires a lot of people during that show to set up their own house as if this was like a very special thing, that it's not just a computer on their kitchen table.
Yeah. Yeah. My friend Dan Martin was doing that last year. He has this thing called Magic Date Night. And in the summer, he kind of put together this box, and it's what it is, Magic Date Night. You know, he puts the candle in there. He puts all of these amazing little things that help set the mood, because we don't, you know, even those little things can go a long way to really kind of set your space, even though the space is your living room. And I think that's a really smart thing to do. I have people go and find objects from around their house. I don't send a box or do anything like that, just because I, of course, am doing public tickets too, and people want to buy things last minute. And I just decided it would just be more fun if people grabbed a dollar bill, a piece of floss, a ring.
Their cups and balls, you know.
Their cups and balls set. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They're better.
Yeah. But that's what I like. Out of all the props you could have named, you named like the utility device.
Sorry, don't air that part.
Nobody knows what that is. It's fine.
It was so good.
And yeah, and I think what's really fun is that no one knows exactly what those things are going to be used for until they're used. And so you have this pile of mysterious objects.
That's great.
And so I really, I've been enjoying that. So.
There's last night we had this date night where we made chicken parmesan, me and my fiance, and we set up candles. And then I put on the TV. I was going to put like, oh my goodness, I'm trying to help you, Nick. Instead of putting like a fireplace in the background, I just Googled Italian restaurant ambience. And there is a video of just like someone like put up a picture of an Italian restaurant. And it's just sounds of like wine, of like people talking and like glasses clinking and like music in the background and like crickets. It was the creepiest thing. Because at one point we just kind of went, this like is almost, it was like almost relaxing to hear other sounds again.
We do that anytime really we get Ernie's Mexican in North Hollywood. We take it home and we immediately put on mariachi music. And you're just like, yeah, this is it. We're there, guys. Not my living room. We're there.
Wow. A new level of sadness.
Everything's going to be fine. These nacho chips. Hey, where's the chip guy? I haven't seen him in a while. Oh my goodness. Okay, Vinny, you got to go buy a house. If people want to like get tickets to your show, where do they go? And if they use the discount code 2magicians1mike, they'll get $0 off. That's my favorite.
I so would have set up a promo. So you could go to mentalmusements.com and you can get tickets. There's a ticket link through there that goes to the Stellar page, but that's the easiest way, is just mentalmusements.com.
Awesome.
Great.
I'm going to do that. Guys. That sounds fun.
Yeah, this has been fun. Yeah, come to the show. You two have an open invitation, so please come any night you'd like.
Yes. That's why we do the only podcast. Perk. Zero
money.
I
see the whole thing. I see what you did here. Okay.
By the way, this isn't airing. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, 2magicians1mike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at 2magicians1mike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.